It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ashy, smashy, smash. Welcome to the Monday Smash, presented by State Farm agent Russ Voorhees here on War Chant TV, alongside managing editor Ira Schofel. My name is Tom Lang. Tonight's program brought to you by State Farm agent Russ Voorhees. If you live in the states of Florida, Georgia, and Alabama, don't be fooled by the bottom of the screen where it says Jacksonville Beach and Orange Park. Russ Voorhees serves a broad spectrum of the audience here on War Chant and War Chant TV. Head to RussVoorhees.com for more information. We'll talk to you about Russ Moore in a little bit. Good evening, Ira. How are you post-draft and post-spring football? It feels like it's a bit of exhale time for Florida State on multiple fronts. How are you doing?
Good. With the exception of we still have to see how the portal shakes out. But, yeah, you're right. It definitely the draft feels like some closure. I ran into one of the last practices before the spring showcase. I ran into Braden Fisk. He was there. And I was like, what's this process been like, you know, in terms of – you know, you had the Senior Bowl was what, January?
Yeah.
And he kind of blew up there. Then the combine's in February, and then you have 2 months to just kind of sit around. And he said it was interminable, you know, just the waiting. And I'm sure those guys, I mean, it's just such a huge relief to actually have it be done. Now they know where they're getting to go play. And, yeah, for us, you know, it's kind of closing the chapter, I guess, on 2023 and looking ahead to 2024.
So, Ira, you wrote a 3-2-1 column that appears on warchant.com. For those of you subscribers there that haven't checked it out yet, head over. Perhaps read it as we're talking here on the Monday Smash. And if you're not a subscriber, head over to warchant.com. It's just $1 for your first month to give it a shot. I know you will not be disappointed. Ira, you hit on something in there in terms of the care factor of this team and the heartbeat of this team. You talked about that today on the JCS. You know, you can't measure heart, but you can certainly feel it. You can certainly feel a difference when there is an extra buy-in. Culture is a term that's thrown around an awful lot, but I agree. This team was likable for two straight years. You know, a lot of the same core players, there were pieces that came and went, but a lot of the core guys were the same. That's why the retention from 22 to 23 was just, it was crazy. We didn't expect to have so many guys coming back for another season. Can you recall a team in covering Florida State this long that bought in that much? Or I know every team is unique, but it does feel like this is a very fan-friendly group that's not going to be playing on Sundays.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I mean, there's a lot of teams like I liked a lot of individual players, but I don't know that the overall collective was – you know, and not using the collective as in battles end, but just the collective group was on the same page or on the same accord that since I've been around, you know, probably in the 90s, I'm sure that was the case, but I wasn't covering them every day back then. So it's hard to say, but I would say the one nice thing about, as you talked about that, how likable they've been for 2 years. The nice thing about that is I remember having these conversations a year ago saying that, you know, it's awesome that all these guys are coming back. Jordan Travis is coming back. Terry Verse is coming back. All those guys were coming back for the 2023 season. But we talked about it at the time that we have to acknowledge that that 2022 team that really kind of maximized their potential, especially the second half of the season, finishing 10-3, that you didn't know what the chemistry was going to be like in 2023. Every year is its own organism. And so, you kind of wondered – yeah, it felt like things are trending in the right direction, but there's no guarantee. You brought in some new guys. NIL was a bigger factor in the 2023 team than it was in the 2022 team. You brought in some guys who got probably substantial NIL packages that were new players to the team. You know, so you just didn't know how all those dynamics were going to fit, and they fit perfectly. and that team was extremely likable. So that's got to make you feel good about 2024. Like, these coaches have done a very good job. I think they've proven at this point they know how to manage all that. And you have so many players that are existing players on the team that know how to manage it as well. But yeah, I mean, I think that that's the part of, you know, when you evaluate that team last year, again, I think it's not just likable because they're like, they have good personalities, but you just like the way they all competed for each other and with each other.
And certainly the way they loved each other. That's where that Los Angeles Rams video was just incredible. NFC West football is now a whole lot more interesting to me, Ira. You know, you're watching Verse and Fisk in a defensive line together, Renardo Green. I just happened to be in San Francisco with a bunch of 49ers fans who were watching the draft at a dinner when he was drafted. I said, hey, guys, in case you want to know about your new corner, I can tell you loads about him. Interviewed him multiple times. Does that move the needle for you the way it does maybe for Knowles first, you know, Knowles fans first, that maybe they might like the NFL, but they're more casual. They love college football. Do you find yourself coming to the television a little bit more often if there are players you've covered that are on and say it's Rams 49ers in week four in the 4 o'clock window? Might your television stay on before the Sunday smash a little bit longer if those two teams play each other? Now that so many Knowles are in the NFL now from this group, this core 2023 team.
Yeah, definitely for me, especially because I don't really have an NFL team anymore. You know, I've talked about it before, but I grew up and, you know, was a Baltimore Colts fan. They left us. And then I really never picked up another team. I stuck with the Colts in Indianapolis for a while and then just kind of lost touch with the program, with the team. So I don't have an NFL team. So I'll watch whatever's intriguing on Sunday. And so for a while, that was Jameis and the Bucks, because Jameis was somebody that I really wanted to pay attention to. Before that, you know, in the 2000s, Leon Washington was my guy. Like, when he played at FSU, I had a good relationship with him. So I would want to watch Leon wherever he was playing. And then obviously Jameis. And then there was the Tom Brady and the Bucks. Even though I'm not a Bucks fan, it was just like you had to watch that. It was a spectacle. And so, no, I'm excited about this because this will definitely – the Rams, 100%. I can't wait to watch them. That's going to be a lot of fun. But really – all these teams. I mean, these teams are these. The cool thing is, none of them really went to. And you can correct me. I've taught my head. None of them went to just awful teams or awful franchises. There are some franchises you don't want to go to, and I don't feel like I remember any of them being bad ones.
Jordan and the Jets is your best candidate, but that's right. It's a unique situation where it's a quarterback. There's not going to be much expected of him early on. I'm sure he'll have some very interesting meetings with Aaron Rodgers in that quarterback room. Weird things will be said, but what a guy to learn from. I mean, what an exceptional opportunity that is to learn from a guy like Aaron Rodgers. That's the best I can go with, because the Jags obviously have been more successful of recent. They had the run to the AFC Championship game not that long ago, and then they won a playoff game two seasons ago, and that's where Jerrion Jones is. Trey Benson's in a really unique situation, Ira, because they got Marvin Harrison Jr., the best non-quarterback in the draft. And, you know, I would think with he and Nuke Hopkins, there's not going to be a loaded box for Trey Benson to run into. So that's going to be a fascinating match. You know, beyond this guy that's on the screen right now, and director Ben Spicer put together all these graphics for the NFL draft over the weekend, a great job by him. Is there a fit that you like beyond Verse and Fisk, you know, the feel good stuff? Is there a fit that you like where you're saying this guy matches this identity of this team? And I look forward to seeing how his career blossoms on Sundays.
I'd probably go with Renardo Green in the 49ers just because, man, they are so, you know, they're just such a physical, nasty defense. And I think that's what he is. You know, I think he fits perfect there. Tatum Bethune, I think, I love Tatum Bethune as a college linebacker, and I think it's a great organization for him. I think it says a lot that they drafted him with what they've had at linebacker. But it's also like you look at the guys they have at linebacker, and it's like, man, that's, you know, it's going to be a challenge for Tatum to play at that level. I mean, they've got some dudes. So, I mean, hopefully he gets there, and maybe he's totally healthy, he can do that. I just wonder the path to playing time, how that's going to be for him there. But I think Renardo Green's a great fit. And I think, you have to think so much of what they do with about identifying talent on the defensive side of the ball. And then the way they play, I think it's a great spot for Renardo.
I love what both wide receivers are going to. And I'll start with Johnny Wilson. with the Eagles. I know, Ira, you and I, especially on this very program, have been more pro Johnny than just about anybody else on the staff. Not named Dominic Robinson, obviously, when he first dropped his bombshell.
Yep.
But what a situation to be in if you're Johnny Wilson. They just extended AJ Brown. They have an all everything receiver and Smith out of Alabama. They love to ground and pound, run the ball. So you've got a small receiver that you can block for, check for Johnny Wilson. You've got big targets that are going to command double teams. So Johnny's going to be in singles an awful lot. It's a team that wants to be physical and runs the ball. I mean, look, I don't know, Ira, that he's going to get a second contract and it's going to be extremely lucrative with Philadelphia. But if you're trying to be put into a situation where you can succeed early without the burden of a ton of expectations, Johnny Wilson is in a nice spot. I would have liked for him to have been drafted earlier. I think at that size with that 40 time and how his hands were coming around towards the end of the season, he's a better player than a sixth rounder. But what an incredible value for the Eagles. I think that he's got a chance to make it there, especially because, again, he'll be target number two, target number three when they go four wide.
Yeah, and I think it might be good for him to not have the pressure of feeling like he's got to be the guy. Because really, honestly, you know, the whole time he's been at Florida State, he's kind of lived with that pressure. And I know people have complained about the drops here and there, but, you know, there are – I could probably point to four or five games over the last two seasons that they don't win without Johnny Wilson. I mean, the Oklahoma game last year, you know, the bowl game, the Florida game that year, probably the Louisville game, you know, helping Tate Rodemaker win on the road. I mean, he's had so many big plays over those two seasons. And yeah, I mean, I think it'll be good for him. He's an interesting guy. Like, I am curious to see how he fits in that NFL world because he's a different cat. Like, he did not like to do media interviews. So we only interviewed him a couple times during his time at Florida State, maybe, I don't know, four or five. And he's very smart. He's extremely smart. He's kind of got that California laid back vibe, but he practices really hard. It's just an interesting guy. Like, I could see him being a pro's pro, like not talking, just getting his job done and doing well. But he's different. You know, he's just a different kind of guy. I wonder if that hurt him at all. Cause, you know, again, so much of, you know, just so much of, it seems like the evaluation process is, you know, do you live, sleep and die football? Oh. And, you know, I don't know that he's that guy. He seems like the kind of guy that might be fine. Like, I don't know, looking at artwork or something, you know, he's just different. He's a little bit different.
Yeah. The term aloof is usually negative in terms of its implication. And I don't mean it that way, but it's just, yeah, he's different. I could tell you that anecdotally walking around campus a couple of times to do the job interviews or whatever, going to practice, I might cross paths with him and I said hello, and he's extremely courteous. You know, it's just like, I think he just wants to be in his world, go play football and then be done with it. And you're right. Did you see that? I think it was Monday Morning Quarterback. Is it Albert Breer that does that now? Anyway, a story out of for Bo Nix being drafted. The scouts fell in love with him because they asked him what's in his backpack, and it was ankle tape in case he had to work out. And it was a notebook so he could take notes of what the questions he was being asked, and a playbook, and like, you know, because he could simulate plays. And they fell in love with him because he just loves football so much. It's like, get Ira, what are we doing?
If they're that easily played, that's cool. I mean, it's good for him. But so I don't have any doubt that stuff goes into it. I think Johnny's in a great spot, and hopefully he kills it there. And you know, all those guys, I mean, you know, like you said before, Keon's in a great spot. Yep. The difference, it's could be night more night and day. I mean, Keon's going to have to be a dude right off the bat, and you know, that brings with it its own kind of pressure.
It's a ton of pressure. Stephon Diggs is now a member of the Houston Texans, and so therefore the first receiver that was off the board for Buffalo was going to be put under the spotlight, and that's exactly where Keon Coleman is. But if you're a player of Keon's ilk, Ira, if you are a number one receiver, and that's what you believe you are, and that's what Keon Coleman showed to be when he was healthy at Florida State last year, you want a badass of a quarterback. You want to go play with a badass of a quarterback on Sundays, and he's got Josh Allen. And he's about to be thrown into the fire. What I like about this, Ira, is sometimes it's a generalization and a reputation isn't true, but I think Buffalo likes to play with a little bit of edge, that particular division that he's going in, a lot of physical corner play. there's going to have to be fighting through physicality and cold weather, and he's got to come away in jump ball situations, you know, with Josh Allen's throws, which are pinpoint, but they're coming at 100 miles an hour. You could just see that visualization of Keon going up against some of the better corners from, say, the Jets in an important game in December, and it's in the front pylon of the end zone. Who's going to come away with the ball? There's Keon going up for it. It feels right. There are some guys that they put on a uniform and you're like, I don't see it. I'm not feeling the juice. We use this an awful lot, but Bjorn Werner as an Indianapolis Colt in that scheme, it just never felt right. This is a nice fit for Keon Coleman. He's got a chance to play in high leverage games in the very, very early part of his career with tons of expectations. And I think he's got the personality to handle his expectations too.
Well, I was going to say, he's getting what he wants, man. I mean, he wants the smoke. I mean, he's a guy that when he was at Florida State, was not bashful about letting everybody know he wanted the ball, and, you know, not to where he was a troublemaker or anything like that, but he believes he was open on every play and he wanted the football. And, you know, I remember there was a game, I can't remember what game it was, midway through the year, where he came in to do post-game press conference, and they have the stat sheet, like where we do the post-game press conference, they have the stat sheets on the table. And then they also put the stats up on the, like an overhead projector. And he walked in and looked up at the projector, and it had his targets and catches. He looked up at it and he's like 9 targets. That ain't right. Like he was not only mad that he didn't get more targets, but he's like, I definitely didn't get 9 targets. And he's not. Whereas I do think it might be a good situation for Johnny to kind of ease into it. I don't think Keon wants that. I think he wants to be the guy, and yeah, it's going to be put up or shut up. I mean, he's got to get it done.
We've got a giant contribution this evening, and we want to say thank you very much to Harry Detweiler. Harry, in case you want to ask a question, feel free to come with it. Just a very generous thank you from Harry. What you laughing about, Ari? What do you note?
I actually met Harry the other day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Really nice guy. Really, really nice guy, and a big fan of what we do, and big Noel fan. That's much appreciated, man. Not necessary, but much appreciated. And real nice guy. And he's been at War Chant, I think, back since the beginning.
Oh, wow.
And really likes what we do and couldn't have been nicer. So I appreciate that.
Harry, thank you very much. In the event that you do have a question, throw that in the chat. Yes. Director Ben Spicer will throw that to the top of the list. I wanted to circle back to something, Ira. You mentioned about the personality of Florida State's team, these outgoing guys. And we agreed, coming out of camp, this might have been last year, these camps blend together because we get so much access, but talking about what is one word that would describe the way this team practices, and I believe we both came to the conclusion of professional.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a professional group. They really loved each other, and that's the warm and fuzzy stuff that we're feeling on draft day. But how would you compare that to what you saw in spring camp from this group as they're trying to form a new identity, a whole bunch of new starters, a bunch of leaders that were entrenched? We knew last year who the cornerstones of the program were going to be because they were all retained. They're trying to forge something else on the fly here in the portal era. How would you describe what you saw in spring practice? Because I only saw a couple days, but you got to see a hell of a lot more. What's the personality of the team so far as they head into summer workouts compared to the last couple of years?
Yeah. The professional thing worked and I think made perfect sense because of, you know, they all were, not all of them, but most of them were proven commodities. And it was about just fine tuning. It's kind of like watching musicians who are like excellent musicians and they're trying to get it perfectly in sync, you know? So you see a lot of refining and attention to detail. This spring was very different. Not in a negative way, but just they're not at that point. So it wasn't, I don't want to say that they are not professional, but I just wouldn't think that that's the right word because so much of it was, you had so many guys kind of drinking from a fire hose at different parts of camp where, you know, they're doing install and guys are, you could tell, thinking and not reacting. But then you'd see a couple of days where, okay, now they're on it. And then now the coaches throw something new at them. So to me, it was a, if I had to put an adjective to describe them, I would say the words on the tip of my tongue, probably something like thirsty or hungry. You know, you could feel that, like that they want to get it down. There's definitely a, you have a lot of guys kind of on the fast track. Marvin Jones Jr., you know, is a guy who came in, hadn't really played hand in the ground defensive end at Georgia, and he's trying to learn everything he can in a month's time. It was like a cram, course for him, DJ Uiagalelei, Jaylen Brown, Malik Benson. I mean, all these guys are learning something new. And it was like almost like a crash course or cramming to get it all in the spring. So I thought the effort was great. The work ethic was great. The intensity was great when they knew what they were doing. But the biggest thing was just so much information being digested that it was much different from a year ago.
Yeah, like searching for it to click. You're waiting for that moment that it clicks, and then there's just
And then you'd see spurts where it would, yeah. But then like they'd install more information, and then you'd see it kind of take a step back again.
There was a day, the second practice I saw with DJU, where he was worlds better. There was weeks apart, and he completed quite a few deep passes in an 11-on-11 segment. And just everything about the way that he would drop back and scan the field, his body language was calm. Like, you'll like this one, Ira. He looked like Roger Federer just waiting to return. Beforehand, you're like, man, there's nothing that surprises me. Right. And it looked much, much different than the first time I saw him, which was, man, everything just looked tense. Right. Malik Benson the same way, I thought, towards the end of camp. But his synergy with DJU was a real thing. And you got to see that. I think the offensive line was still growing a little bit as well, but it seems like there are only a couple of things where, you know, like Azariah Thomas, you know what he's going to be about each day, and he knows the scheme. Ventrell Cypress on the other side of the field, Shaheem Brown. You've got some anchors, but last year there were anchors everywhere. Everybody knew exactly where to be. The one thing I would say, maybe you agree with this, maybe you don't, but in terms of the practice structure and going from A to B to C and getting the work done, I didn't see much of a learning curve there. It was about what took place during the periods, not the process of getting through a practice or surviving or having the stamina to get through a practice. They looked like they were ready to go.
Yeah, no question. I think that's a product of just the new age of college football. You know, it is year round. And so long before they get out there for spring practice, they've already had walkthroughs, they've had meetings, they've done the installation stuff in the classroom. So when they get out there, it's not all brand new to them. Now the teaching points are. So if you watch, you know, Odell with the defensive lineman, or if you watch Atkins with the offensive lineman, you know, you're seeing the teaching points being emphasized when they get out there. But yeah, they know where to go, they know what they're doing. What is going to be interesting is like how well they use these next 3 or 4 months leading to camp. Because again, you know, when we talk about the NFL draft and all the talent they've lost, they lost a ton of talent. But I think they've got a ton of talent. I mean, and Mike Norvell says this is a faster, stronger team physically than they've ever had. And I think it's a super talented team. Now, will they get to camp to where now it's about fine tuning and not about still trying to learn? Because if they can do that, then yeah, you've got a month to fine tune. And then you've got some of these games where, you know, they're going to have more talent than most of the teams they play, but they also are going to have some really tough games and they've got to be on point.
The situations could not be more different in terms of who the head coach is, the time period. You know, like Jimbo's rise, 29 to the NFL in a couple of years span, 29 straight wins. That was one thing. 2016 was the kind of the beginning of the end, even though they went to the Orange Bowl and they won the Orange Bowl. But I recall something that Jimbo said, Ira, before that season started. I know that we've got a bunch of combine all-stars, but I don't know if we've got all the football players in the world. I don't think it's quite that far where they're bigger, they're stronger, and they're faster. But that thought, to what extent do you think that might be a concern for this group? Because they certainly do their numbers. Mike Norvell cited that at the Battle's End event that you were on the panel for. You know, they had so many guys over 20 miles an hour, 21 miles an hour in terms of speed. How would you put that in context? Do you think this is a group where maybe that's just a bunch of combine guys or football players?
It's funny you say that, man. I don't know why. Somehow the YouTube algorithm, I was watching some videos and somehow it brought up like a Jimbo post-practice scrum, like when we used to get him after practice from the 2017 season. I believe it was 2017. I believe it was 2017, like during preseason camp. And he was furious about the attitude and basically went on one of his rants about, you know, these guys are going to find out if they don't want to be here. You know, I can't make them, you know, if they don't want to bring it, if they don't want to, you know, just kind of went on this rant about the practice. And now thinking back to you, you're saying that, and then thinking about some of those moments, was it the 16 season where they had the game down at USF and he slammed the thing in the, you know, he slammed the table and we're never going back to that and all that kind of stuff. Go ahead.
I was going to say that I took a screen grab of that. I can't pull it up that quick, but I forget what player it is behind him in the locker room. He's scared and confused. Like, is this man lost his mind?
Well, and I think so much of 16 and 17. So, and the reason I bring that up is because of your comment. I think he knew it by 26 and 17 that things were going in the wrong direction. Like that he had lost, you know, they had lost the fire. They had lost the team spirit and all of those things that, you know, that they did have, quite frankly, in 2013 and 2014. And so I think at that point, he's talking like he's out of frustration, but deep down, he probably had to know he was a part of the root cause of the problem. So the reason I say that is because the difference here is, again, you know, this program is being a run in a different way. Like Mike Norvell's has not lost his eye on the prize. I mean, you talk to people around him, you talk to people around the staff, he's more motivated and focused after the snub and after everything that happened last year than he was probably before. I mean, and he was super focused and motivated before, but that certainly didn't diminish it. It's not like, you know, Jimbo won that national title and then had another great team the next year and then kind of put on cruise control for whatever reasons. And the thing started sliding. Mike Norvell, you're not seeing any signs of that. So I don't see that as a concern. But on that topic, just, I want to go back because you touched on the idea of like playing for each other. I'll always go back to this conversation I had with Alex Atkins when they first got hired. And I talked to him about like the challenge of rebuilding that offensive line. Cause when Alex Atkins got hired, and people kind of lose sight of this because, you know, a lot of people are like, why haven't they offensive linemen drafted? Why haven't we developed high school offensive linemen? Think about what that offensive line was in 2018, 2019, and think about what it's been these last few years. But at the time I asked him when they got hired, I said, like, what do you do? Like, how are you going to kind of resurrect this offensive line? And he said, nothing else matters. It's not the X's and O's. It's not technique. It's nothing. Nothing else matters until we can get them to play for each other and to be happy when each other have success. And as a program and as a team and as a position group, if my offensive linemen aren't happy when they're on the sideline and somebody else makes a great block, or when the running back makes a big play that they didn't even block for, but they're just happy for their teammate, he said, until we get to that point, nothing else matters. So my point is, I think they've been at that point now for the last couple of years, and I don't see that changing. So I think if you've got talent, I think the culture and all that stuff is in really good place. And I think that, you know, that'll take care of itself.
Well, and three of the guys that they brought in on offense are nice additions to the culture as well. And I'm not saying that just those three guys, but I'm going to cite DJU, quiet, unassuming leadership, but leadership by example.
Is here for the right reasons. And
And as excited to be at Florida State, you know, you get that sense, and that the players can feel that too. Malik Benson, everybody's raved about, you know, about being in the facility at all times. He's one of the best interviews on the team. I don't think it's even close. He's fantastic, and he understands the nature of the question. He reminds me a little bit of LaMarcus Joyner in that he can almost read what you're actually asking beyond the question, that the transcript of what is being asked. And then everybody raves about Roydell Williams too, as a player who, again, buys in, brings an energy, brings a presence. These are leaders that are going to have to develop in short order, but when you combine those players with somebody like a Darius Washington on the offensive line or a Maurice Smith, you can kind of see how the offense comes together culturally speaking. But like you said, it's a crash course. They had it entrenched for a couple of seasons before that, and now it's just going to take a little bit of time to develop, as well as the bells and whistles of the offense. Tally DeCalli supports the program tonight in the Super Chats. Thank you so much. $1 for each winnable game on the schedule. All right. So I like that. Tally DeCalli is assuming, Ira, a Saturday game in Charlotte in December, because that's $13, not $12.
Well, he does say winnable game. He doesn't say he doesn't guarantee they're going to win them, but right. He's basically saying they're all winnable, which, yeah, man, there's no doubt they're all winnable. You know, we do have to be realistic, though. I do think, and I kind of touched on this briefly in that 3-2-1 column, I think this schedule is going to be more challenging than the one a year ago. I mean, Miami's going to be better. There's no doubt they're going to be better. Their quarterback situation was a wreck last year. If Cam Ward is healthy, he may not be the greatest thing ever, but he's going to be an upgrade from what they had. They've done really well in the portal, and you're going to be going to Miami, which we know when Florida State comes to town, they actually show up, and it'll be a good crowd. So that's a challenge. I think at SMU is a challenge. Somebody mentioned in the chat earlier, Georgia Tech is going to be a sneaky, tricky challenge just because it is your first game with DJ Uiagalelei and some of these new pieces, and it's your first game and you're playing it in another continent. So, you know, again, and there's, you know, probably one or two others that are going to be challenges too. So I'm with him. I'm with you. Tally to Cali, Florida State for sure could win all of these games. But I think there's a few that are a little peskier than maybe you'd like to see.
And also, you know, it's funny. You got to start thinking about this. Tim Young says in the chat, I think this team will start slow and keep getting better, hopefully peak during the playoffs. That is such an NFL thing to say, Ira, until recently, because now where the college football playoff is going, you know, the expansion of 12, it'll get to 14 or 15 or whatever the hell they decided on in a year. But it you can do that now, whereas every week forever and a day in this sport was do or die. You lose, you're out, unless you're the 23 Florida State Seminoles and you don't lose and you're still out anyway.
Hey, I was listening to Bruce Feldman's podcast, and he was saying he thought like Miami, they were talking about Miami, and he said, I think, you know, Miami could go 9-3 and get in the playoff. Do we think there's any chance of 3-loss ACC teams getting in?
No, I mean, who are they losing to? Florida?
I don't know.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, so yeah. Florida loss wouldn't count against the ACC ledger, but Florida, really? I mean, I'd have to look at their non-conference to see how that could possibly happen. Miami as an at-large at 9-3? Did you watch the selection show last year? What are you talking, you know?
I mean, I guess theoretically, maybe saying they get to the championship game. The conference championship game and then get in that way. I don't know. I just, to me, I've felt like Florida State needs to be, the nice thing is to the point of that comment, you could lose a couple games and still get in with the new playoff, but I don't know that I'd feel comfortable losing any more than two games.
No, no. Again, at this committee, I'm in this new dawn age of college football and the way the networks seem to have their hands all over the selection process. Win the conference. Like, however you get to Charlotte, win that game, and then you're assured a spot. We're going to talk a little bit about the portal. I see a lot of questions in there about the portal. We'll get to your questions in general here on the Monday Smash presented by State Farm agent Russ Forhis after this message from our sponsor.
Contact Russ Forhis for an auto quote today.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
The badass of an Ole is State Farm agent Russ Forhis. He supported WarChant.com forever and a day, but forever and a day plus one with Florida State University, Florida State Athletics. Russ Forhis puts his money where his heart is, and that's with Florida State Seminoles Athletics. If you want to support an Ole in this industry, that is the insurance industry, State Farm agent Russ Forhis is your guy. Isn't that correct, Ira?
Yeah, and also mention not just War Chant, but mention you're a Florida State fan. I mean, I think that it means a lot to him, the fact that he's got a business where he can help other Noles. And again, there's no pressure. There's not going to be any hard sell. Basically, if you reach out and get information from him or his staff about what your needs are and what they can do, and obviously State Farm has got a tremendous reputation in terms of protecting their clients' interests with their insurance. So just at least, you know, reach out and try to get some information. Go to the website, call those numbers, stop in if you're in the Jacksonville area, and, you know, tell them we sent you and tell them you're a Knoll because, you know, again, it means a lot to him that Florida State fans are supporting him because he loves Florida State and he feels like, obviously, everybody's in this together.
If you're listening on the podcast, Russ has brick-and-mortar offices in Jacksonville Beach and Orange Park. For more information, head to russvorhis.com, RussVorhis.com. All right, I see a lot of portal questions out there. Our Matt Lacerre has done a great job covering that, documenting it. It's been a bit of a slog. The portal window closes officially tomorrow on April the 30th. However, Ira, there is a distinction there because paperwork, red tape, sometimes it takes time in terms of there's a deadline, but as long as you submit your paperwork or you submit your intent to enter the portal, it might take another 24, 48 hours for your name to actually physically pop up in the portal because of what compliance needs to do to get you into the NCAA transfer portal, correct? So this could actually drag out to May 1st, May 2nd.
Yeah, it can. The basically, the schools have a window of time from the time you submit the paperwork to where it actually has to be posted and you show up in that database. And so, yeah, if a player turns it in tomorrow, it may not update right away. What you're seeing now, though, is so much of the, you know, our Pete Nakos and these guys at On3 and probably other people at other sites as well have done such a good job of, you know, putting it out there when guys have made their decision to go in the portal, but maybe the paperwork isn't finalized yet. So we might hear some information, even if it's not final by tomorrow. But yeah, as you said, it could drag on a little bit longer than that. And, I still will be surprised if we don't see a few more Florida State players go into the portal. At the same time, it's kind of like you scratch your head why it hasn't happened yet, because they do. I mean, I think Florida State needs to still probably have a few guys leave to help them out in terms of, you know, getting numbers in order. And because of that, I think that's part of the reason why they haven't been super aggressive. Plus, I think they feel pretty good about this team. Like, I don't know where you feel. I mean, if you had your druthers, you'd like to see Florida State go get another D tackle, go get another receiver, maybe another one or two players. But it's not like you would if they weren't able to do that. I don't think any of us would be like, oh, this season's a loss. Whereas the last 2 years, I think you probably felt that way at some positions.
Yeah, there's a if you're ever going to buy something or rent something, sometimes there's a provision in a contract, IRA, that says as is. Like you take this on as is. If Florida State's roster as is takes the field in the fall, they've got a real shot to win the ACC championship. But if you're trying to expect that they can make. Are they going to call it the Final Four or the national the college football playoff semifinals? Like, I wonder what they're going to call it, what they're going to term it. They're a player or two away, probably. I personally am a little bit concerned that we have not seen a run of exits into the portal, Florida State players making a decision to go elsewhere. I know that there's a drag on that in terms of potentially information with compliance. I'm not so worried about the incoming side because I do see questions there. And James B., thank you so much for the contribution. We'll get to it in just a second. On the incoming side, guys have as much time as they really want. I'm sure that there's a soft deadline, Ira, that you know programs want to get kids in for conditioning and summer workouts. They want to get them enrolled and on campus and all that kind of stuff for summer semesters. But as long as you enter your name into the portal by this deadline, you can then still take visits. It's not like every decision has to be made on I'm out and then here's my next school by tomorrow night at midnight. That's not how this
exactly.
works.
Yeah, exactly. Guys, once they're in, that process can take quite some time. They can take as much time as they want basically to take their visits and information. Yeah, I think there's sometimes a perception that the window closes on April 30th and then that means it's all activities done. No, it's just players have to be in the portal if they want to be eligible for this fall.
James B., thank you very much for the contribution. My goodness gracious. Your kindness and generosity knows no bounds, good sir.
Thanks, James B.
Hello, Ira and Tom. Great show. The question came up again today, but have we ever had a definitive answer on using NIL money instead of scholarship for players, particularly graduate transfers? Ira, do you want to take this first or you want Tom's 2 cents over here?
you can share your 2 cents, but okay. Either way.
Yeah. It's an expensive proposition would be my 2 cents on it. You know, it's you still have to cover the cost of tuition. So if you're going to be handling NIL for a kid without a scholarship, that gets really expensive and it's not like you've got unlimited resources. So I don't know that it's the most cost-effective way. You know, in theory, sure, you could build up a roster of 90 to 100 kids and go all Bear Bryant and just have a ton of players that you've got the deepest roster in America. But I don't know that anybody's pockets are that deep that they're going to be paying tuition. Essentially, that's what you have to do is cover the kid's cost of room and board plus. So
yeah, and it's not just tuition. It's it's the cost of attendance, full cost of attendance, which
right.
You know, I don't want to speak and say a wrong number, but you know, a lot of times it's $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 because you're not just talking about tuition. You're talking about, you know, books and fees and housing and food. Now some meals are provided for walk-ons, but not all meals are, like, they don't get all the same benefits in terms of food. Yeah. If you wanted to do it, you can do it. And there are players, they're 100% James B. There are 100%. There are players that are walk-ons that have NIL deals that help make them, not just at Florida State and other schools, that help make it possible for them to go to the school. I know for a fact there have been walk-ins of Florida State that have had NIL deals. And without that, it might have been hard for them to go to, you know, Florida State. So that does happen. And if a player, say a player had a valuation in the NIL world of $300,000, then, yeah, I mean, theoretically, you can make it a $350,000 valuation and cover those expenses. But I don't think that that's what most players want. And so the thing I would tell you is, could it be done? Yeah. I don't think most players want to be walk-ons. You know, most players want to be scholarship players because there are some benefits that scholarship players have that walk-ons don't have. And maybe we can get with Derek Ray or the staff and kind of, I don't know if they'll be super forthcoming about that topic because they try to treat all those guys as equal. But the reality is there are some things scholarship players get that the other guys don't. So it is possible, but I don't think that that's the preferred path from what I gather.
And okay, from what you gather, it might help you with numbers in the short term, but it's not a policy. You know, it might help you with somebody. Okay, maybe a certain position group is going to open up because you've got a couple of veterans and you know there's a scholarship to allocate a year later. But it's not quite the same as roster hoarding through going beyond the 85 and paying for paying through NIL. Like, it just doesn't.
It could be. I could see it as a one-off or a two-off even. So where if they had a numbers crunch, I guess James B. bringing it up right now as we had this conversation is, so say Florida State is not where they want to be from an overall number standpoint, 85 scholarships, plus they have to maybe lose a couple because of the NCAA sanctions. But if they really needed a player and the player really wanted to come to Florida State, could they make it happen? Yes, they could definitely make that happen. I just don't think it, like to what you're saying, it's not really, there's no sign that that's going to be standard procedure anytime soon.
So again, you know, we'll be watching the outgoing market over the next day, really 3 days in case there's paperwork stuff. But you're right. Pete Nakos and others do a great job of, you know, announcing that a kid has intent to enter the portal, has gone to compliance. And so therefore you should expect to see his name populate. It will cover you. We'll have that covered for you at warchant.com, warchant TV over the next few days. And that, Ira, has large implications about how much room Florida State has to go out and go get players. I know Matt Lasser was on with Jeff last week on the JCS talking about this. It seems like Florida State on the incoming side of the market is waiting to see if there is a Keon Coleman level player at a receiver or maybe another position. They want to wait till this deadline gets closer to closing to know what everything looks like, what the market looks like, because right now they don't have anybody that's jumping off the page that they must go and grab. Is your understanding the same way, especially as it pertains to receiver? Maybe they might like some kids at defensive tackle, but maybe at the skill positions.
Yeah, and there is some movement. I think Matt's got a story coming up on the site shortly about that defensive tackle from, is it Grand Rapids? Defensive tackle, Suggs, that is going to be visiting this weekend. And so they're – I can't remember the pronounce.
It's JVR Suggs.
JVR Suggs.
And he's at Grand Valley State.
Grand Valley State. And so he's a guy that they are going to have on for a visit. And that's, you know, again, we've all felt defensive tackle and receiver are two positions that they will try to make happen. Anything beyond that, though, yeah, I agree with Matt. I think they've got to figure out what kind of space they have. And to kind of, for people that didn't read the breakdown we did probably a week or two ago, basically they were at 89 scholarships. If you consider what they had in the spring, plus the players that are going to be coming in this summer, because several freshmen and at least one transfer are coming in this summer. So now that adds up to what they already had. That put them in the high 80s. That was before Greedy Vance went in the portal. And so, you know, they probably still need to lose a few to get to 85. But because of that NCAA sanction based on the Amarius Mims situation, there's a feeling that they might try to get to 82 or 83 because they have to lose five scholarships over these two seasons. But there's flexibility there. They could go with 85 this season and then go to you can have up to 85. You just can't have over. And they could go to if they are at 85 this year, they'd have to go at 80 next year.
Yeah, exactly. So this does create complications. Perhaps that's the intent of James B's question. Is he's counting scollies and restrictions and saying, how do we make this? How do we make the difference work? Make up the difference. You could see it. If they wanted to be aggressive this year and hit that 85 number, I mean, you put it in the end of your 3-2-1 column about projecting ahead for Florida State in the NFL draft, your prediction without giving it all away. But I mean, it's that they put double digits in the draft this year. They could do better than that next year in terms of professional talent on Florida State's roster. If you're going to have that type of talent purge, maybe it's easier at that point to navigate down to an 81 or an 82 versus this season when, you know, it does seem like an awfully crowded roster and you can't force kids to leave, but I'm sure that phone calls and texts are happening over the next 24 to 28 hours.
Yeah. Are you sure you want to come back and be third string?
I had a bit last week where I said, you know, Ron Dugans is in the receiver room and he goes, all right, you four, three of you have to go. What do you want? You want this watch? You want this watch? Here, I'm not kidding. It's on the desk. Who wants this watch? we've got to make some space, guys.
Do you like Jordans? I've got some classic Jordans. That's definitely a position where I think we all expect maybe one or two guys to go. It's interesting because to the point you make about that talent on this team going into next season is, you know, Mike Norvell has said this is the biggest, strongest, fastest team they've had since he's been at Florida State. You went out and got DJ Uiagalelei out of the transfer portal because you didn't want to just roll the dice with Brock and Luke and Tate. You know, you were active going to get – basically their decision to get active in the quarterback portal made Tate Rodemaker decide to leave. So – you obviously, to make the decisions they've made, they believe this is a team that can go to the playoff. And I've talked to people that talk to Mike Norvell that are not media people around the program, and he is very confident and excited about this team. And I think coaching staff is. So yeah, everything points to they want this team to be a title contender and a playoff team. And if that's the case, then yeah, maybe you don't want to shrink the roster if you don't have to, and you want to have every possible weapon that's available to you and then figure it out in 2025.
P. Simpson, that's quarter to never is the answer. When is the War Chance with Herbie coming this summer? Got my popcorn ready. Nah.
Tom, I couldn't watch the I've watched game day, no matter how bad it got, no matter how stupid it got, no matter what dumb stories they did, no matter, and every Saturday morning, man, it's just my ritual. I get up, I watch game day, and I get ready for college football games, and I will tweet about game day sometimes, making fun of it or praising them if they did something good or commenting on something that happened, because it's just part of my Saturday morning. It's been that way for 30 years. I could not watch a minute of them on the draft. Like, I literally recoiled when I realized that they were doing the ABC version, and I watched the NFL Network the whole time. And that wasn't a conscious decision. I don't know when I'll go back to watching them, man, after all that nonsense.
No, we'll have something a lot more fun in Dublin, put it that way. They would be wise. And I hate this because it sounds like it's calling for being disruptive and over the top. But they should really put game day inside Aviva Stadium. Man, that's not going to be a good setup. And I'm not – people, be respectful as much as you can be. You can have some funny signs if you really want to go. Just come hang out with us instead. How about an empty college game day atmosphere where you've got local confused Irish folk and some Georgia Tech grads in the background? Like, let's have that. I think that's a bigger statement than angry Florida State fans behind them and shouting and cursing. It's a better look, but I digress. Brett asks, any chance, what do you think, Ira? Any chance the NCAA sanctions are going to be a Reggie Bush Heisman? Are they getting reversed?
Not that I haven't gotten any sense of that at all. And I know a lot of people have asked that, like, why does Florida State still even have to, abide by these sanctions when the NCAA lost their lawsuit against Tennessee and was it Virginia?
Might have been, yeah.
And, yeah, basically Florida State agreed to the punishments that they got, and they did not sue. And their case was different. It wasn't the same exact kind of case. This was, I believe in some of those other cases, it was about boosters that don't work for the school. Florida State's situation was you had a coaching staff member who, you know, had, there was evidence that he was involved in that process. So I don't think those sanctions are getting rescinded. If they are, it's totally news to me. I've asked some people about it, and I haven't gotten the sense that that's happening.
Here on the Monday Smash was presented by State Farm agent Russ Voorhis. Last couple of things. Tally to Cali. I like this question. Ira Tom, which player comes out of fall camp most improved from what we saw in the spring? Anybody that you like their potential, Ira, that you think might make that leap come fall camp?
Maybe Cam Davis wouldn't shock me. And he looked good when we saw him. He wasn't available in the spring game. People saw him on the sideline. He wasn't available. And so, you know, he had something that set him back a little bit. But I think there's a ton of potential there. And then I think Jaylen Brown at receiver is a guy that I still think there's tons of potential there. And we saw flashes of it, but we didn't see it consistently. I think he's a guy, if he takes that next step, I think he's a difference maker on that offense. So those are two guys that jump off the page. More offensively, because I think on defense, I know most of what that is. I mean, I know what the defensive line is. I feel like we know what the secondary is. And I feel like we have a pretty good handle on the linebackers. So I'd focus on offensive guys.
Were you surprised at how effusive Adam Fuller was about Blake Nicholson's development and his performance in the scrimmage and then the follow-up practice after that towards the end of spring camp? Did that come as a surprise to you, or did you think that Blake has looked like he might have taken that step?
He's looked good. It didn't shock me, but it also made me realize, okay, I probably don't know exactly what I'm looking at sometimes with the linebackers, because I mean, Justin Crier. I've seen that. Somebody did that as a meme, but anyway, Justin Crier, I think, has made more. And I've got Urban Meyer in my head because he's golfing with Norvell at the Peach Bowl tournament. They paired them together.
Mike, make sure that nobody looks to take pictures with him. Nobody comes up to him to do shots and take pictures, because it turns bad after that, Mike.
Justin Crier, I thought, made more wow plays. But yeah, when he said that, I was like, okay, all right. And we like Blake. My biggest question with Blake has always been just, you know, the physicality of the position, because we know he can run. He's super athletic, but he still need to put on some size. But yeah, that when he said that, it definitely made me think, okay, all right. I definitely think there's no doubt in my mind that linebacker, it's DJ Lundy, Omar Graham, Crier, and Blake Nicholson are your top four. I think Adam Fuller's basically made that clear. And then Sean Murphy's got to catch up to those guys.
Yeah.
And maybe they'll go after a linebacker in the portal, but that four feel pretty good about him, and I wouldn't disagree with that. I thought they had a good spring.
So Murphy's a good candidate too. If he stops thinking, right, you know, and he assimilates the information, you could see a big jump in play, right? Because I recall a couple of plays where it's in front of him, so he doesn't have to do any reading, diagnosing, and you could see the closing speed that Sean Murphy has, and it's substantial. So if it does get to more of an instinctive level, Dupree says Hakeem needs to step up. Do you think it happens for Hakeem this fall camp? There are moments, there are flashes, but it's more eyes are going to be on him this fall.
That's a great point. He does need to. I don't know that's going to happen, though. I didn't see enough in the spring to say, yeah, it's definitely going to happen. Again, one thing that it's important to kind of remind ourselves, and I'm reminding myself of this, you know, when a guy comes in as a freshman, the players where you see them going up against in practice is usually other freshmen or sometimes even walk-ons. So guys may look – so like Hakeem looked great last preseason camp and had some moments in games before he got injured. But this camp, this spring, he was going up against Cypress and Azaria Thomas, who, I think are as good as corners. They may have the best corners in the ACC.
Yeah.
They probably do have the best corners in the ACC. And so it was a slog for those receivers. So he might be better than we think, because he'll be going up against not as good DBs when they get into games. But it's just hard for me to predict it. I agree. He needs to. It will be awesome if he does. And I will say this. I haven't gotten the sense that he's been, it's affected his attitude at all. I think he's, you still see him being a willing blocker. You're still seeing him being a good teammate, staying after practice. He's always often one of the last guys off the practice fields, putting in time, doing everything he's got to do. So it'll get there. But it just, this spring, it still didn't seem like it was there yet.
See, I think there was one more. Oh, yeah, Carol. I like this question from Carol on Facebook. Always good questions from Carol. How many total points do we average per game on offense this year? I recall an article from Corey 2 years ago previewing, well, I guess last year this time, previewing the 2023 Noles, Ira. And he said, like, the barometer is 31.7 or thereabouts if you're trying to get to that upper stratosphere. And until the injuries happened, Florida State was there. They were on target. They were averaging more points per game than they were in 2022. You think they average 30 a game this season on offense, or do you think that they, you know, it's some weeks might be a little bit tougher, but they're going to lean on the defense?
I think they will. You know, and it's funny you bring up those stats, man. That's going to be such a challenge this whole offseason and really into next year. When you do any reference to stats from last season, their offensive stats don't look good at all. But it is because once those injuries all hit, particularly the last few games with Jordan, the offensive production went in the tank. So it's almost like you need to break out the stats from like the first, whatever, six games or whatever it was, and view those as one entity and view the second half of the season as something else, because the season stats really got affected by that. But yeah, I think they will. I think the running game is going to be really good, man. I think the running game is going to be very good. I think DJ is going to, I know, again, we've talked about it. People were not thrilled with what they saw. Some people were not thrilled with what they saw in the spring game. I think DJ is going to play really well. I think they've got good enough talent, and hopefully they'll, you know, if they go get one or two more playmakers at receiver. Yeah, man, I think it's going to be a good offense. And I think the defense will get them in good situations. You know, part of, you know, an offense scoring is, are you having to go 80 yards every time, or are you getting some short fields? This defense was pretty productive at takeaways this spring also, so they could get some short fields as well, and you could see some defensive scores. So, I would definitely take the over on 30.
It's hard to predict turnovers, but this group does look better at going and getting the ball. You're right. They do look better at going and getting the ball, giving you short fields. And then a guy like Jalen Lucas on special teams, too, can be electric as a returner, yes. Perhaps some special teams short fields. Knowles for my life, I like this as a capper question, and we'll set up what's coming up on WarChant.com, WarChant TV this week. Realistically, should we be fired up about this team? Yeah, I'm fired up about the Noles. I'll answer this on the fan side of the equation. Because they have fewer known answers, but they've got more talent, maybe not top-end talent, but more depth. It's not an underdog mentality. I think, Ira, when the ACC future odds come out for, you know, ACC championship and things like that, Florida State's going to be at the top or near the top of the list, top two, top three. But this is different than last year, where everything felt like it was nicely cookie-cutter, ready to go. It's just about executing. They have all the pieces they need. This isn't quite so clean, which I think makes the journey a little bit more fun. And this schedule is fun as hell, too.
Yeah, I think you definitely should be fired up. But here's the thing, and I guess it goes back to that thing with DJ. I was disappointed, and I know sometimes I probably focus on some negative posts, either on our message boards at the Tribal Council or on social media, where people are like, because they haven't seen DJ look great yet, they're assuming the worst. I would just encourage you to hope for the best. I'm not saying you have to be 100% convinced what you have, because, you know, I can't tell you that. We've seen what we've seen in practice, but just allow yourself to be hopeful that the DJ is going to play really well, because I do think he is going to, and they've got a lot of nice pieces around him. The other thing I would say is I didn't love the game plans all last season. I mean, I think Mike Norvell is an incredible game planner. I think he's an incredible play caller. But there were certain games last season where I didn't feel like it was – there were times where I didn't feel like it was making the most of what you've got. It felt like sometimes trying to get everybody touches. You had so many, you know, big-time playmakers, and we've got to get Keon the ball. We've got to get Johnny the ball. We've got to get Jaheim the ball. We've got to get the backs the ball. You know, it just felt sometimes – and that may be all in my head, and I may be projecting, but that's kind of how I felt at times. I think Mike Norvell's at his best where he feels like he's got to help the offense with his play calls and his designs. I think we saw that in 2021, 22, And I think this situation will bring that out in him, because there were a couple days in practice this spring where they kind of opened up the playbook and it was fun to watch. And I'm kind of looking forward to maybe seeing some of more of that out of Norvell, where it's not just about executing at a high level with a bunch of veteran players, but the coaching staff needing to scheme it up a little bit. That kind of has me excited too.
Yeah, that's something where you just got to go on trust out there, War Chant TV and podcast audience, that we're speaking honestly of what we see. I saw one day in which there was a rhythm out there, and you're going, oh man, this is okay. Mike's bringing it today. One was the first day I saw it was in situationals in short areas, red zones or whatever.
Right. I remember that day. Yeah.
And that was fun. And then the other time was 11 on 11, and DJ and a couple of receivers just took over. It was 3-4 play sequence where you go, oh my God, again? You know, you're thinking, where is this coming from? Big running plays too in some sequences. They've got weapons. How many more do they get is what we're going to be previewing here on WarChant.com, WarChant TV, in the next couple of days. What Florida State Seminoles, current members of the football program, are going to try their hand at another program and enter the transfer portal? We'll have that coverage for you. Matt Lasserre, Michael Langston heading up that coverage on WarChant.com. There'll be an update video on the channel tomorrow morning for any late night developments. Check our channel. Hit subscribe on the button below. We'll have updates intermittently on who's exiting, what visits are being scheduled, where Florida State might be hitting the road and visiting some targets. That's coming up also on warchant.com, Ira. No midweek baseball game this week, as I believe it's exams, but there's a whole lot coming up for Florida State across many sports this week, including a rivalry game, softball, Joanne Graff Field between Florida and Florida State.
Yeah, I got the Gators rolling in on Wednesday night. That should be a fun game. And then, like you said, you know, they'll be back. Baseball will be back home this weekend. I got a real quick baseball question for you, Tom. Not FSU baseball. So the Orioles are playing the Yankees 4 games this week. First game's tonight. Orioles are hanging on to a 1-0 lead right now. How much do you guys hate the Yankees? Like, is it because you don't – it's not like you play all the time, but, like, you're not in the same league even. But what's the relationship for Mets fans and Yankees?
Okay, so we're not even in the same league as reputationally either. I mean, you know, that's the hard part. They had the run when I was a teenager of 3 and 4 years, but they haven't won one since 2007. So they're starving up here. I just living up here. They're starving for one up here because they think 16 years is far too long. And the Mets won a World Series when I was 2 days old. That's their last one. So look how old I am.
But if you're walking through New York and you've got your Mets stuff on and you encounter Yankees fans, is there hostility there?
Yeah, like if you go to a Subway Series game, yes. You know, and I look forward to going to a couple of those. But I've got so much family from different parts of Long Island and the boroughs that are Yankees fans. We get along. Like the difference between a New York baseball fan and a Boston baseball fan, for example, from what I found, New York baseball fans are get mad at their own players. Like they get mad at their own. When they're pissed off, it's because our guy did something stupid. Boston fans, in my experience, just are mad at everybody else and think that they're God's gift. And so you can kind of see where my delineation is in the American League East. I'm not a big fan of the Yankees. I enjoy when they lose, but it's fairly peaceful. Now, let us win a couple of World Series, and maybe it gets a little bit dicey, but they don't perceive us as a threat either. And I know what the Mets are. They're lovable losers. That's, you know, we can't all have perfect teams, Ira, you know?
Lasserre doesn't like your slander about the Red Sox.
He's proving my point. Thank you for proving my point. But, yeah, anyways. I mean.
All right.
Yeah, that's enough about New York baseball. Are you going to any Orioles games over the summer? Are you going to make your way to either down to Pete or?
Definitely both. Well, they're going to be in Miami right around the time ACC kickoff. I think they're going to be there the few days right after ACC kickoff, after we're in Charlotte. So I'm going to go down there for that. Yeah, I'm going to see them in Tampa in June. And I'm going to try to get up to Baltimore too. So, yeah, hopefully.
Thanks for chiming in there at the end, Matt Lasserre. Always locked in at warchant.com, the boards and what we do. For Irish Rafael Director Ben behind the scenes, we thank you for tuning into Monday Smash presented by State Farm agent Russ Voorhis. We also want to thank again Harry Detweiler, James B., yes. Tally to Cali. Thank you all for your support of what we do. It helps us do things better. So we really appreciate that. To everybody in the chat who participated, asked questions, thank you very much. Stay tuned to warchant.com. news has to be coming sometime when it comes to the portal. So we'll have it covered for you on both ends of the spectrum, warchant.com and Warchant TV. For Ira, I'm Tom. Good night, everybody. Remember, wake up, Warchant, and Seminole Headlines coming up this week right here on this channel.